classical music project, the Icarus album.
Despite the grief and the tragedy, it is a celebration of Icarus on both sides of the veil, from the living and the afterlife.
Seniors are meeting up in Waterloo to talk about travel at the Friday Flicks Travel Show.
People are not interested to stop and hear a lecture. They want to see the pictures. Our audience wants to not only enjoy the afternoon and meet other people, but they also want to learn something.
The cities of St. John and Moncton bid to co-host the 2029 Canada Games.
It makes for an opportunity for both communities to share the opportunity, also share the risk of hosting something like this.
Queen's County athlete Abigail Smith will join Team Canada's European Judo Tour.
It's crazy to me. I didn't think it was going to happen. It's really exciting.
And our solar system will again put up a great show during the Great Alignment.
Right now, we are at the right place at the right time. Right?
Gotcha.
And we won't be able to see that for over 50 years again. So this is rare.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Hello and thank you for being with us again this week. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next half hour and in good company. Our national correspondents are feeding us great stories this week. First up, out west, the Winnipeg Police, in collaboration with Manitoba Public Insurance, just launched a road watch drug impaired driving enforcement initiative. Running from January through March, the campaign targets drivers under the influence of cannabis and other substances. Constable Peterson explains that another aspect of the campaign is to increase awareness of how cannabis, particularly edibles or ingested cannabis, affects the body. The risks associated with edibles stem from their delayed onset. They can take several hours to peak. This delay can lead to overconsumption and an overwhelming level of impairment. Details with Ryan Funk in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
You know, when it comes to cannabis impairment, we are seeing a constant rise.
Running from January through March, the campaign targets drivers under the influence of cannabis and other substances. According to the Liquor, Gaming, and Cannabis Authority of Manitoba, the sale of cannabis edibles has nearly doubled since legislation in 2018.
When it comes to edibles and products in general, cannabis products, we're seeing, you know, that the numbers keep rising quite significantly and very concerning to us in that sense.
The risks associated with edibles stem from their delayed onset, unlike smoked cannabis, which affects users almost immediately. Edibles can take several hours to peak. The delay can lead to overconsumption and an overwhelming level of impairment.
And what we've been seeing through some of the studies that and training that we've been receiving is some people don't feel the effects right away with the edibles. They may take some more, consume some more to feel the effects. Now, only in a few hours, it all of a sudden kicks in and it's kind of an overwhelming effect that they receive.
Constable Peterson says the Winnipeg Police Service has increased officer training to detect cannabis impairment with the use of standardized field sobriety tests and approved drug screening equipment to evaluate drivers. This equipment includes oral fluid tests, which detect recent oral drug use. Last year's enforcement project yielded 243 traffic stops, 148 oral fluid tests, 43% tested positive for cannabis, 36 Provincial Offenses Act notices, including unlawful storage of cannabis in vehicles and passenger consumption. The Winnipeg Police Service is spreading its message through social media, press releases, and public outreach. While specific educational efforts in schools were not confirmed, the broader goal is to initiate conversations at home and among young drivers that impaired driving is a year-round concern. I'm Ryan Funk.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
Ryan Funk, who has also produced a piece on how the Winnipeg Muslim and Indigenous communities unite to inspire systemic change. This as the city of Winnipeg hosted its first Muslim Indigenous Solidarity Conference, with the two-day event divided into several panels and discussions on the impacts of colonization, ongoing discrimination, allyship, and reconciliation. In this excerpt, Ryan spoke with Leah Gazan, Member of Parliament for Winnipeg West, and Dr. Ingrid Mattson, London and Windsor Community Chair of Islamic Studies at Huron University College.
You know, we can't look at our oppressions in isolation. It's important right now, particularly with the rise of extremism, for people to work together to ensure human rights for all peoples. You can't pick and choose when to uphold human rights. We are in a human rights battle right now, and I have confidence in humanity that human rights will prevail at the end of the day.
But what we'll find instead is if we do put effort into understanding what is happening to other people who are being oppressed, we put a little bit of that effort and then we listen to them and stand beside them, what we find is often our exhaustion starts to lift. We start to feel energized because now we found someone who understands, who can sometimes help share our burden and we share theirs.
It's not just two communities here. I see actually a very diverse audience, and I think people are in general really committed to the collective good and really trying to figure out a way to lift each other up and to ensure the dignity and humanity of all people.
Listen to the rest on frequencynews.ca. You can also find on Frequency another story that we could not fit into this episode of Viewpoints, but it's well worth the listen. A 22-minute documentary about the Canadian classical music composer Eric Lankin, who just launched his debut work, the Icarus album, at the Waterloo North Mennonite Church, a place with deep connection to the composer's family. Lankin says he composed this album as a metaphor for losing his father to mental illness. Here's an excerpt of that 22-minute documentary from Dan Keller in Kitchener, Ontario.
I'm Eric Lankin. I grew up in Kitchener, Waterloo, lived for a time in Guelph and a time in Hamilton, and have been based in Montreal for the past 6 years now. I'm a composer of new classical music. I am a political troublemaker, and I'm someone who struggles with mental health and manages to function very highly, despite living with bipolar. So I created a new classical music album. It is called the Icarus album. It's an instrumental album in the sense that there's no lyrics or vocals, but nevertheless, it's very narrative, and it combines performances by some of Canada's best classical soloists, certainly Montreal's best classical soloists, and it also features sound design that I made with the great Devin Bate, who is easily one of Canada's most important producers. And so the album, for me, is inspired by the myth of Icarus. Icarus is a character who I've always felt drawn to ever since my diagnosis of bipolar. He's a common metaphor for living with bipolar in the sense that you cannot fly too high or the sun will melt your wings, and you cannot fly too low or the water will wet your wings and you will fall into the ocean and die.
Intriguing, is it not? A beautiful music from the Icarus album by Canadian composer, now based in Montreal, Eric Lankin. In an early review of the Icarus album, critic Robin B. James of V-Glue magazine wrote, "This amazing work of Eric Lankin creates a new triumph, which I would place high in the pantheon of significant human musical expressions."
You're on the air with Viewpoints.
So how to transition from such beautiful music? Should we talk about traveling to foreign countries or about the solar system? Well, we'll do both. The Friday Flicks travel show program hosted by the City of Waterloo at the Community Pavilion is drawing crowds of 120, 150, and even up to 180 people at a time. They gather every other Friday afternoon to listen to a presentation about someone else's travel story. The The program has been running for well over 10 years, and in the last few years has really begun to pick up steam with 2,400 attendees in 2024. Journalist Leah Gerber spoke with Sarah Kelly, who organizes the program for the City of Waterloo, as well as longtime participant, volunteer host, and presenter Rick Chambers about the program and what exactly is drawing all these people together.
We often stop for at least half a day in San Jose, the capital, and it's not a remarkable city, really, but it does have a couple of features that are worthwhile seeing.
Janice Bach is wearing a microphone headset and slowly strolling through a seated crowd of about 150 people on a Friday afternoon in Waterloo. The room is packed. Bach is a featured speaker for one of the City of Waterloo's programs called the Friday Flicks Travel Show. It's all about people coming together to listen to others' travel stories. Sarah Kelly is a programmer in youth, adult, and older adult programming at the City of Waterloo who organizes the program.
For 2024, some of the shows were Dubai, exploring the desert and the UAE. A few of them were on the Canary Islands. We had a show on Denmark and Copenhagen. We had one on Portugal. We had someone that was celebrating their 40th wedding anniversary, and they went on a European river cruise. So then we got to hear all about the castles and cathedrals and medieval villages from Amsterdam to Budapest. We had shows on Italy and South Africa. We usually have at least about 80 to 90 people that pre-register. We are almost at, like, when we're up to 180, we're almost at max capacity. So we're almost at the point where we have to turn people away.
In the last few years, Friday Flicks has become massively popular. In 2021 and 2022, the program attracted 875 attendees each year. 2023 saw 1,300 attendees, while 2024 saw 2,400, and there's no sign of it slowing down. Kelly says, on average, each show attracts about 120 to 150 participants. The highest she's seen is 180 for one show, and that was about a bird-watching trip to South Africa. The group meets every other Friday from 1:30 to 3 p.m. at the Waterloo Memorial Recreation Complex Community Pavilion. Rick Chambers is a volunteer host and presenter for the program. He's been attending for about 13 years.
Since I started in 2012, I've made over 50 presentations. What makes a good presentation is keeping the pictures going. People are not interested to stop and hear a lecture. Like, they want to see the pictures, they want to hear your stories, and, you know, and humor doesn't hurt as well, to throw in some things and, you know, and help them see what you learned from this, because people, our audience wants to not only enjoy the afternoon and meet other people, and it's a social outing, but they also want to learn something when they're there. So it's an intellectual and educational pursuit, as well as a social gathering and entertainment.
The program started as a group of people getting together to watch nature and National Geographic-style documentaries and movies over 10 years ago. Then it morphed into attendees sharing their own traveling experiences. Now, a featured presenter will share a prepared presentation, which is followed by socializing time with treats and coffee.
I'm on the City of Waterloo Age Friendly Committee, and I'm also on the Region's Age Friendly Network. And, you know, one of our great concerns is social isolation for older adults. Get them out, get them doing things, and get them socially engaged and intellectually engaged. And I think that's one of the things that the Friday Flicks Travelogue does.
I'm Leah Gerber.
This is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You're tuned to Viewpoints.
And during the next few weeks of February, we will again be able to turn to the sky and observe its magnificence and wonder. Some of us got to watch a solar eclipse in 2024, and 2025 will provide us with another celestial show, the Great Planetary Alignment hits our screens. It's a rare celestial sight visible in our night sky, and the next one will show up only in 2040. Malar Kendekar, the president of the Prince George Astronomical Society, has spent a few orbits viewing the cosmos through the lens of the Prince George Observatory. Kendekar says the phenomenon should remain visible until about mid-February. Kendekar recommends looking at the southwest and viewing the planets through a pair of binoculars if we can, as they greatly amplify, of course, our ability to see Uranus and Neptune. Here's Ian Gregg in Prince George, British Columbia.
The great planetary alignment is when all the seven planets are visible in our night sky. So all the planets actually orbit in a path in our solar system in a three-dimensional way called an ecliptic, right? So every single planet orbits in an ecliptic path. So most of the time, you won't be able to see all seven planets in the evening sky at the same time. So this is a rare event. So, of course, as we know, celestial mechanics of every single planet is their orbital period of each planet is different. For example, Jupiter's orbital period is about 27 years or so. My numbers could be off. But the first planet, which is in our solar system, is the Mercury, which has the shortest orbit because it's so close to the sun, and Mercury is also tidally locked to the sun. So that planet takes about 88 days to complete one orbit. So you will see Mercury just after the sunset, just at the twilight. And then you'll see Venus, which is the brightest planet in our sky right now. It's, I think, the absolute magnitude is minus 4.6 or so, right? Which is really bright. So in astronomy, Okay. Everything is really weird. The negative meaning the objects are really bright. Positive means the objects are really faint.
Interesting. So one aspect of the significance is that seven of these planets are visible in our night sky. And the other aspect is that they are in alignment. You actually can look up and see them in a...
That's right. So when you think about an alignment, we think as a straight line in one dimension, right? But we are looking at the solar system. So the sun and the moon, they're in two-dimensional order.
That's how we perceive them from our point on Earth.
That's right. For an observer, it's two-dimensional. And then when we're looking at other planets, it gets into three-dimensional. So the planets are always aligned in our solar system because they're following the same orbital path, which is on the ecliptic. But the difference about this one is they will be visible because their orbit right now, it's in such a way that they will be actually visible in our night sky. All the seven planets, including Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, and Uranus. All those seven planets will be visible. So right now we are at the, you know, we can say right place at the right time, basically. Right?
Gotcha.
And we won't be able to see that for over 50 years again. So this is rare.
So make sure you take a look up at the sky starting January 24th. Through to...
So right now, just after the sunset, you will be able to see at least four or five planets. 25th January is just the date that someone decided that's going to be the best view.
Okay.
But is it really true? No, unfortunately.
Okay.
Right? So they have been kind of visible for almost 10 to 15 days, and the visibility will actually get better as Mercury will be kind of above the horizon and not really, you know, very close to the horizon. It will be about 20, 25 degrees above the horizon. So at that time, you will be able to actually see all the seven planets. You will get a good view of that.
Okay.
So you will see it at least until the end of February, all the seven planets. So you do have a lot of window of opportunity to actually see all those seven planets. One thing you have to be mindful of, you won't be able to see Uranus and Neptune with your naked eye because those two planets are quite far away. And I mean, if you do have a good eyesight, you will be able to see Neptune and Uranus. I have a terrible eyesight, so I can't see them. But yeah, even if you have a small pair of binoculars, there are lots of applications for Android or iPhones like SkyView, SkyMap, StarMap. So you can actually point your phone in the night sky and get the exact location for all the planets.
You can kind of ID where in the sky you should be looking and then bring your binoculars up to that point, and there's a pretty good chance you're going to see something.
That's right. For Uranus and Neptune, And for other five planets, they're extremely bright. So it's really easy to see those planets like Jupiter, Venus, Saturn, Mars will be really red. So another thing to notice about the planets when you're looking for the planets in the night sky is the planets won't blink like other stars do because of the atmospheric turbulence. So even in the low atmosphere, even there is a high air mass, the planets won't blink because we are looking inside our solar system and they're much more brighter as compared to the stars because they are, you know, thousands of light years away.
Simply further away.
That's right. So that's a great way to look for the great planetary alignment.
And, right.
Yeah.
In your time volunteering and working with the observatory, do you have a favorite celestial event that you've witnessed? And do you think that this event might actually eclipse that?
There are so many, honestly. And over the years, I have seen or discovered gamma ray burst, supernovas, tidal disruption event, meaning a star getting sucked by a supermassive black hole.
Wow.
It was all CCD, like taking images systematically of the entire night sky, and then we look for these transient events, right? That's one of the research that I do. But from the observatory, one of the cool things I've seen is a comet, which I think was in 2020, C2020F4, also called as Neowise, that was visible to the naked eye. And then just last year in November, we had another comet called Comet Atlas, C2024Q4, that was also visible to the naked eye. So periodically, you will get all these really cool comets that you can actually take photos of, or sometimes even the comets will be visible to the naked eye as well. But this event is a rare event because we might not be able to see it again in our lifetime. So looking forward to seeing some of the planets that are visible.
Excellent. Visiting us from the Prince George Astronomical Society, Mr. Malhar Kendekar. Your time and expertise are very much valued.
Thank you.
Thanks for cluing us into this celestial event.
Hello, I'm Candace Vetter in Embrun, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints.
The cities of St. John and Moncton are hoping to host the 2029 Canada Games and submitted their bid to the Canada Games Council. If the bid is successful, 2029 will be the first time St. John has hosted these games since 1985. Journalist Yono Ko spoke with the bid committee's co-chair based in St. John, Bill McMacken, and with Andrew Beckett of Envision St. John, the growth agency responsible for economic development, about the process and the interaction between the two cities, as well as about what the games will ultimately look like.
It's essentially New Brunswick's turn to host the Canada Summer Games. Last January, the province kicked off the bidding process. We are doing a comprehensive bid document. We will hear about that in February, and they'll do a site visit. And we should know in early April that it's official. We've had really positive feedback from our community partners, from our municipalities in both regions. There's strong support in the St. John region and the Moncton region for this, so we think we're in good shape. It makes for an opportunity for both communities to share the opportunity, also share the risk of hosting something like this, and it allows us to take advantage of the best assets between the two regions and pull together a really regional approach in Greater Moncton and the St. John region, which is going to, I think, result in a really positive event for the community.
Our feeling in terms of doing it collaboratively was that there's ways to better utilize existing assets in both areas to minimize the amount of capital investment that's going to be required and deliver a product that was going to be really good for the athletes that are coming, beneficial to the entire province. I think there's great opportunities for us to be doing more in collaboration with whether it's Moncton or Fredericton on other things, but we just, rather than being in a win-lose situation, we think there's an opportunity for both communities to do very well through these types of collaborations. The operating budget for the games is in the $35 to $40 million range. A good portion of that, about $10, $11 million, is paid for by the federal government. The province will be putting in $7 or $8 million towards it. Local municipalities have agreed to contribute $4 million, and then there's a whole fundraising part that goes along with it. But so it's a fairly big undertaking. These are great community building events. People still talk about the 1985 Canada Games when it was here, and it's a great way to build community. Events like the Canada Games provide a really interesting space to bring people together in a joint celebration.
These interviews were conducted by Yona Ko in St. John, New Brunswick.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
I do not know if the 11th grade student Abigail Smith will take part in the 2029 Canada Games, but I can tell you, though, that the Liverpool Regional High School student will be competing against judokas from other countries yet again as she prepares for a tour of Europe with Team Canada in March. Smith will be traveling to Spain, Portugal, and Croatia for European tournaments and training camps. The 17-year-old Brooklyn Queens co-resident, who began judo lessons when she was 4 years old, is ranked in the top 10 in her age division in Canada. Smith will have to juggle travel, training, and tournaments with school and social life. Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, reached out to Abigail Smith.
So I've traveled with Team Canada one time last year, which was for an event in Germany, and like I was so excited for. And now I'm going. I got selected to be on a tour, which is an even bigger deal. And I didn't think that would happen for me this year at all. Like my main focus was, oh, I need to win nationals. But like now I'm going to three different countries in Europe for spending a month away in Europe. Like it's crazy to me. I didn't think it was going to happen this year. It's really exciting.
She said she's looking forward to the more intense competition of the European tournaments.
The training is really, like, for me, it's like the most important thing. Getting to train with different bodies. Like being in Canada, you know everyone that you're training with, and you're not getting familiar with different fighting styles. But getting to go outside of Canada and train with these, have these camps, like fighting round after round with people from all different countries all over the world, it's the experience. You're getting so much experience from it, which is going to make my judo like way better, and I'll see big differences. Tournaments in Europe are a lot different than tournaments in Canada. There's a lot more aggression. There's a lot more people who want to win. So I'm getting so much experience. Because judo is my life. Like, the thing I love the most is judo and everything that comes along with it. So, like, for me, doing all those things, like sacrificing time with my friends, like, I want to go to the Olympics. I want to be world champion. I want all these things. And I know that the goals I want and that I've dedicated so much time to, they're not going to come true unless I keep with it. So I keep with it. And my friends, everyone in my life is so supportive. They're like, no, like, go train. We'll make time later. Like, they're always... They know I need to train. My family, my friends, the community, everyone's so on board with everything I do. It makes it 10 times easier.
That was Abigail Smith speaking with Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia. This is how we close our show this week. Thanks to our many journalists, Ryan Funk, Dan Keller, Leah Gerber, Ian Gregg, Yona Ko, and Rick Conrad, and to our national editors, Conrad Fox and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm Boris Chassagne, your host and producer. Thanks for keeping us company this week, and until the next, ciao.
the next alternative radio, hear Chalmers Johnson on Blowback, the consequences of U.S. foreign policy. That's alternative radio, Wednesday afternoons at 4, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby.